I'm going to introduce you to the Transnational Research Institute for Pain in Later Life, and I'm going to tell you what it did for me and what it may possibly do for you. So TRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRR NIA, the Division of Behavioral and Social Research, and they're aimed at developing and pilot innovative ideas for translating basic behavioral and social research findings, such as the ones that you're doing, and yield programs and practices that will improve the lives of older people and the capacity of institutions to adapt to societal aging. So Triple is specifically focused on pain in later life. It grew out of the Cornell Institute for Translational Research on Aging. It was first funded in 2009. It was just refunded in 2014. And now we have a specific emphasis on behavior change in the context of pain and aging. It's composed of principal researchers, some of them may be familiar to you, both here and at Weill Cornell. It has institutional partners, including Weill Cornell, Cornell Ithaca, and also Cornell Tech, right, the new tech campus, because we're interested in leveraging technology in the interest of behavior change in the context of pain in later life. And there's also community partners. There's over 40 institutions, including major hospitals, but also smaller community-based institutions that are research-ready for collaboration and for recruitment of participants. So the goal is to support a research infrastructure that can enhance the productivity of existing projects, that can accelerate the development of new ideas and applications, that can recruit new researchers to aging and or translational research, and that can also provide a context for getting multidisciplinary teams to solve practical problems. And the reason I'm here today is really with regard to these last two, because I think maybe there's some people in this room who might be interested in joining a team or extending some of their work. So I'm going to tell you what this opportunity did for myself and hopefully encourage you to explore options for yourself. So I've been studying intertemporal choice for quite some time. I'm interested in phenomena such as time discounting, so devaluing the impact of future events, advancing positive events, pushing out negative events, interested in future anhedonia, so the tendency to devalue the intensity of one's future emotions, hot-cold empathy gaps between oneself and others and between oneself and one's own future emotional states, and also sequential choice, so how do we sort various kinds of outcomes over time. And I was working happily in my laboratory, but I was kind of hoping at some point to extend this to more real-life applications. And if you think about pain management, a lot of it is intertemporal as well. Pain in later life is often chronic, so it's an ongoing process. There are trade-offs between immediate and delayed effects of treatments. Non-steroidal anti-inflammatories make you feel good. They take away the pain, but they may give you stomach or cardiovascular problems in the long run. Joint replacement requires a major commitment, initially in terms of pain, suffering, rehabilitation, but then it may give you functionality and pain-free life later on. Physical therapy requires some annoyance and grunt work initially and a lot of self-regulatory effort, but then again, it can give you benefits. So you see how some of the intertemporal paradigms are very applicable to this, but there are barriers to translation. There are methodological challenges, right? So this up there, 10 today or 11 in 1 month is a typical temporal discounting paradigm. Try to apply this to pain and you end up with something like, would you rather get 10 migraine headaches a month? You have 10 migraine headaches a month. Would you rather reduce them to 6 headaches a month right now or 5 headaches a month in 1 month? So it gets really complicated. You can see this is from a real study, and you can see that it would be difficult to interpret the results. Also, there are competing theoretical frameworks, right? Temporal discounting would mean that you push out the negative as far as possible. But then there's research on dread avoidance, where people advance negative outcomes because they don't want to experience the dread while waiting for something bad to happen. And there's multiple aspects of time horizons that have been studied in the lab, global time perspectives across the whole lifespan, and then more looking towards the immediate past or future. Also, in medical contexts, multiple stakeholders are involved, patients, families, friends, providers, and so on. And it can often be difficult to get funding because you're kind of sitting in between like the typical scenario that a lot of institutions are used to funding, and so it's not quite sure that they see you as a good target for providing funding. In my own work, I was lucky enough to get connected to Triple. They funded me in their first iteration with one of their pilot grants. And so I was able to conduct a qualitative inquiry into temporal horizons in pain management, looking at perspectives of physicians, physical therapists, and middle-aged and older adults. I took a focus group approach to get really rich and thick descriptions of what was happening with time perception in the management of chronic pain in later life. And the questions prompted temporal fluctuations in pain levels, treatment time horizons, patient-provider conflict, and so on. And what we found was that, yes, time horizons are definitely a factor in pain management. People were talking about time a lot, both in terms of temporal markers, such as next week, but also in terms of event-based markers, such as after I have surgery. In general, patients' time horizons were more limited, but there were a number of factors that seemed to limit them. Some people mentioned that they couldn't forecast the future, right? So ambiguity. Others were afraid to imagine the future because they were fearing that their condition would worsen. Yet others didn't want to think about the future to avoid thwarted hopes, right? So very similar effect, but different potential mechanisms. There was also evidence of patient-provider conflict. So one physician said, when I'm pushing the physical therapy, they will tell me it doesn't work. Why are you bothering? And I'm trying to get them to understand that physical therapy may take months, but it oftentimes is the best long-term relief. In fact, some physical therapists voiced that they were kind of jealous of the physicians because the physicians could just prescribe something, whereas the physical therapist somehow had to get the foot in the door. So then they started giving massages or hot and cold treatments. And then some patients had this attitude. You know, if my genes were on fire, I wouldn't say, well, next week would be okay. Right? So very striking comments that clearly show that there's time horizons at work. It's just a question of capturing them. We also found some age differences. Both patients and providers agreed that pain is more stable in old age, even when it was clear that it was a condition that was not necessarily age-dependent in its prognosis. Long-term effects were a greater concern, which is also interesting, given that older adults are more likely to live shorter. Providers also perceived older patients as more passive and less likely to actively control pain, were particularly concerned about the long-term self-control and managing pain. So these are just some of the highlights of the findings, but they propelled me to do ongoing quantitative research where I specifically focused on the context of joint replacement decisions. So now that I have a better understanding what different aspects of time horizons matter, right now, we're looking at the relative role of future time horizons in terms of a global limitations in lifespan as compared to age stereotypes as a potential reason why older adults don't want to have joint replacement even if they are ideal candidates for the procedure. And we're finding, preliminary findings seem to indicate that it's not age stereotypes such as, you know, pain is a normal aspect of later life that's holding them back, but this notion of I don't have much time left to live, so why should I bother being in rehab when I could instead enjoy the moment? Also, we're looking into the role of experientially similar others in decision making. And so, of course, people may have some insight into hot, cold empathy gaps, and they may have difficulty envisioning themselves post procedure, but they can basically visit potential futures in others who have already engaged in joint replacement. And so we have some effects that they selectively seek out the people who had a good experience, right? So interesting bias right there. So if this kind of sounds like something that you may want to pursue in your own research and some opportunities for kind of extending your findings, we have monthly work in progress seminars where you can get feedback on grant proposals and manuscripts, help with design and methods, matchmaking with potential collaborators and groups of participants. So we have access to that, and it gives you like a mini grant panel where you could explore like how would it be like if I, you know, apply to nursing-based research or like the National Cancer Institute, right? Something like that. What kind of headwinds might you encounter in that context? Because we have lots of clinicians on that panel. There's also a yearly pilot study program. Deadline is September 30th. One-year projects, up to $20,000 in direct costs. Open to faculty, postdocs, and PhD candidates. And again, the emphasis is translating basic behavioral and social science research on behavior change to benefit older adults with pain. And we have an ongoing webinar series that highlights key topics that may be relevant for people who are interested in translating their work. And finally, there's an email newsletter and funding opportunities. And you can access all of that by going to our website, which has been kind of unobtrusively in the upper corner all the time. It's www.triple.org. You can also contact Kara at Lyle Cornell to join the email list. She can send you application materials for the pilot program. Again, the deadline is September 30th. And also, we have a wine and cheese networking event October 21st at the Stadler, where you can meet the PIs and local collaborators. If you're interested in joining us for that and explore more opportunities to extend your research that way, again, you can contact Kara and make sure that we put you on the list. So hopefully, this can provide some tailwind for you in extending your exciting findings to a broader range of topics. Thank you very much.
Thank you.